Masiana, good morning and welcome to our studio.
Good morning, thank you.
For those who doesn't know you, or maybe they haven't seen you yet because it's a short time you are visiting us, where are you from?
I'm Brazilian.
Where exactly? Because Brazil is big, yeah?
I come from São Paulo, which is the southeast, but I live in Rio de Janeiro, or what people call Rio.
How did you end up in Oroville? What's the connection? Did you hear about Oroville before, or you just stumbled upon when you were traveling through India, or...?
I had heard of Oroville, but it wasn't in my plans to come. And I was all the way up in Rishikesh, and I got an email from Sam, who teaches capoeira here. And being from like the capoeira connection and the capoeira world, we kind of like consider people like family, and naturally like, you know, part of a network that is trustworthy. So Sam had the fabulous idea of inviting me to come and teach some dance classes. And so I agreed and I came.
Yeah, besides capoeirista, you are also the teacher of samba, yeah?
Yes.
And that's what you were sharing with us this week?
Correct.
2-3 days more. And you are particular with which samba you're giving a workshop in, yeah?
Yes.
What is that?
So we are doing samba de roda, which is meant to be the origin of all samba styles that we know today, all the variations like the samba carioca, samba de enredo, samba gafieira. There's like 100 million different types of samba these days, samba reggae, so many. And so samba de roda is like from the countryside of Bahia, the Bahia state. And there's this region called Recôncavo Baiano, which is like a rural area. And so it's said that it's been practiced for a long time since the African people were brought to Brazil and enslaved, when they managed to like get out of that situation where they were captive. They lived in places where they did their own thing and made their own music and, you know, like created new styles and new ways of entertaining themselves. And samba de roda arised or started from that.
So basically, you could say the samba, it's originated in Africa still, somehow.
The word samba is from the Bantu people or the Bantu culture, which means belly button. And they said they believe it's like your first connection to the world. Firstly, to your own mom with your umbilical cords, and then with everyone else that you relate to. So I guess the word samba has come from samba. But samba itself as a dance, the footwork as it is, the rhythm, started in Brazil, but by African people, but they were already living there. So if you go to Africa, you don't find samba. You don't find the same beat, the same step,
so
the same...
So it's really a result of conglomeration of put people together in a certain...
Yes, and the mixture
form
of the native people who, you know, they are called Indians, but they are not Indians. And the Portuguese or the colonizers as well as the Africans. So it's like the, I guess you can call miscegenation, or like the merging of those people together that originated. It's the same with capoeira. Like if you go to Africa, you don't find capoeira. Capoeira is an Afro-Brazilian martial art, or an Afro-Brazilian dance and art form.
But yet it's really lively.
Very lively.
The rhythm is really particular, no? And it's very well known all around the world.
Yes.
The same as capoeira is getting more and more known.
For sure.
How do you find samba?
Meaning?
I think you live with it, but it still has to have some meaning to you, no? Or when you think about samba, what comes to your mind?
Life.
You see your life?
I can't even remember how it began in my life, or why it's something that was so strong until now. But my first very clear memory, I was about 5 years old, and I sat all my family in the lounge, and it was still vinyls. So I put the vinyl in the player, and it was like, you just sit there and watch. And I came out and I performed for them. It was the song. It was like a theme song of a soap opera at the time. And it was this really full-on, like, sub-enredo styles, which is like samba school. And I remember them laughing. And I was like, you stop laughing. I'm, like, performing for you, kind of thing. And so, so I guess it started there for me. So it's been going on for a long time. and I can't really think of, you know, like daily life without it. Because although I may not perform or teach on a daily basis, I'm always listening to music or like doing research because I'm young and, you know, this particular type that I've decided to research on and be part of, it comes way before I even knew existence. And so I'm part of like a research dance group called Reconcahill. And we're all about the same age. We're all like in between, I don't know, early 20s and maximum mid 40s, 50s maybe. And so like we all go back there and sit with the elderly and talk to them and watch videos. Like we're constantly trying to like maintain that culture.
So you're basically preserving the cultural traditions.
Yes.
Some years back. In your family, there are also people who dance, some probably there, yeah?
Not at all. No. All my family are really like square, corporate. I've got people working in the like law, like police, civil police. My mom works with like education and tourism. My cousin is a language teacher. Who else? I've got my father is into hospitality and hotel management. So like I'm the only more kind of arty like.
But yet if somebody thinks about Brazil, it's actually the, one of the logos you think about is samba, no? And the carnival in Rio de Janeiro.
For sure.
So it's samba is well known and it's also the same as capoeira's national sport. I think it's recognized as such as a part of the Brazilian culture.
Yes, it is. But that doesn't mean that everybody is into it.
No.
Like my cousin is a very clear example of it. She hates carnival. She hates bossa nova. She hates samba canção. But she can't bear the sound of it. She listens to like Coldplay. You know, that sort of thing. So it doesn't mean that because you were born in that land that this is also part of like your passion or something that you enjoy doing.
That has to be really particular and you are passionate about it. But nevertheless, I believe that also what determines someone is an environment. And I'm pretty sure that on radio you hear a lot of those beats which you cannot hear them maybe in the middle of Berlin or London.
True.
So you don't think that it's determined somebody's the perception of the world itself?
Yes,
or
but
the way it's dealing?
You know, because it's such a massive country and I'm from São Paulo, which is also a very cosmopolitan city. And so we've got like however many different radio stations. So you may choose to just listen to English songs.
What if you go on a bus? Or taxi drivers?
The bus doesn't play music.
Oh.
Taxi drivers, they will go with whatever your preference is. If you want the radio off, they will turn it off for you. And people drive cars, you know, like my family, I guess I come like from a middle class background. So most people will have their own car and just drive themselves around. So you do have the option of like not being involved with it at all if you don't want. And like during carnival, you can just take off and go to the beach or the countryside or somewhere that you are away from it. If that doesn't please you, you know, if you get annoyed by it.
Ela é amiga da minha mulher, pois é, mas vive dando em cima de mim, enfim, ainda por cima é uma tremenda gata.
And I decided to preserve the old traditions. What is your other, let's say, mission on this planet? Because I think you are pretty determined, you know how you want to contribute. What are you doing? Well, you live now in Rio de Janeiro, right?
Yes.
In favela, so what do you do there?
I'm actually a yoga teacher, like it's my source of income, and I do massage therapy, so body work, and I work a bit with aromatherapy as well. I guess I contribute on a daily basis for like people to feel better in their own bodies and to enjoy life with what they have. So I don't know if I can call this a mission, but I feel I've got a little bit of understanding in my own life how much better it is to feel good in your own skin and so you can do whatever you want. Whether you are a journalist, a doctor, a lawyer, whatever. So I've got students from all walks of life. I work with kids that are impoverished in the community where I live, in the favela. And so those kids coming from a very harsh background, and sometimes from like homes where there's violence, where there's like alcoholism or just like not really nice stuff, yeah. conditions for them to feel empowered. When they come to yoga or when I'm in contact with them, I make sure that they know that they are unique and that they are important, and whatever makes their hearts beat and whatever makes them happy and like, you know, content about being in this world is what they should thrive to be and go on. So maybe it's like the best way that I can influence their lives. And although it's only like 1 hour that we spend together each week, that 1 hour is really precious. So I get to see, you know, how they interact with each other, how they interact with themselves. Because mm-hmm. I guess when you are practicing yoga or when you're doing something that involves like concentration and breathing and all of that, you see the anxiety, you see the fidgeting, you see how they are like self-conscious. And so I'm always giving them like a word of reassurance and like it's okay. If you need, take your time, rest, you know. Yeah. And I remember like after a few months of us working together, and at the end of class they all were like lying down in Shavasana and they actually rested and relaxed, and that was like a miracle for me. So I even took a photograph and I had like tears in my eyes. And
that's the difference you can make. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I think majority listeners still would have a clue what favela is, but you deliberately choose to live in favela.
Yes.
So what is favela?
Favela, I guess, is the word for shantytown or ghetto. And in Rio de Janeiro particularly, the favelas happen to be in the hillsides or like on top of mountains. And they are occupations. So they are claimed land or land that was nature and that people slowly like built their shacks. And from shacks they became brick houses, from brick houses they became solid structures and so on. And this particular favela I live in is in a very privileged spot of the city because it's right in between Copacabana and Ipanema.
Oh.
So as most of us know, Ipanema is like really famous beach. So Ipanema faces out to the side where you see that beautiful postcards of Rio, which are like the two mountains where the sun sets, and Pedra da Gávea, which is where people do like, what you call it, like free flying? No, paragliding.
Yeah,
so they fly off with paraglides in Copacabana, you know.
It's also the famous beach.
Yeah. So being in an area where people are very wealthy, having that complete opposite where people are not wealthy at all and they, you know, go through hardship, it's interesting because you see like, so if you are on top of the mountain and you like, you know, see all the reality there and listen to the music and see the kids and all of that business, and you walk 10 minutes down the road and you're like in the flashy suburb. And these people that live in the favela, they are actually working for the people that live down at the street level. So if it wasn't for them, they wouldn't have workers. But they are told, oh, you know, this area is dangerous, or such and such, you should turn, you shouldn't go this way, you should only walk that way. And it's kind of silly because, like, it doesn't mean that because they have less that they are going to, like, be violent or be, you know, wanting to get what you have. There is that too. But sometimes that's just out of like drug addiction and not necessarily the people that live in the favela. So I guess favelas are a way that people that don't have as much money have found to live in areas that is still accessible to their work, to their schools, to like living life.
So it's
in a way that you don't have to travel 3 hours to go somewhere and then 3 hours to go back home. Rio de Janeiro is made of more than 300 favelas. Mm-hmm. Some of them in the more like wealthy, privileged areas, and others in the suburb outskirts of Rio. But I guess is very different to the rest of Brazil because there's that mixture, like there's no separation as to where the poor live and where the rich live. It's all blended in. And
so it's like India, no?
Yes.
Quando eu fico admirando, é muita areia pro meu caminhão. Se fosse mulher feia, tava tudo certo. Mulher bonita mexe com meu coração. Se fosse mulher feia, tava tudo certo. Mulher bonita mexe com meu coração. Yeah. Não pego, eu pego, não pego, eu pego, não pego, não, não, não.
What is your impression of India in general?
I love this place. It's hard to say. It's so unique in each location that you may go, like Mumbai is completely different to Bangalore, there is different to Jaisalmer, there is different to Rishikesh. I've been to a few places, like this is my second time in India. And my first time I had the chance of going to Maha Kumbh Mela, and it was the really big one that happens every 12 years. So it was, I guess it's like as extreme as you can get with Indian culture and Hinduism and worship. And I felt at home.
You felt at home.
Yeah, I was happy, it was great. We were camping for 50 days. Like
2 months?
Within within the sectors. There's like 14 different sectors. We happen to be at sector 13. And so I got to see, you know, like all the royal bathing days and how does all this rural like devotion of people doing their pujas and their arati and all the ceremonies every morning, and that really talks to me. I feel.
So if you compare Auroville to that?
Oh, a different world. Yeah.
Different galaxy.
Different galaxy, for sure.
But how you see it? I mean, if somebody asks you, what is that? What do you say to somebody who hasn't been here yet?
I guess I would say it's a very neutral place in the sense that there's no one kind of people, there's not an identity or an appearance or a dress code or a particular way of doing things, or you don't hear temples, you don't hear... Like
depends where you live.
Yeah, I guess the places I've been, I don't have temples like close by, like the audio, you know, because both in Jaisalmer and where else we were, I guess Jaisalmer, Pushkar, Rishikesh, a few of the places, they are very Hindu. They have been around India at, you know, 4:30 a.m. you start hearing the temple, and then if you are near a mosque, you always hear, you know, the prayer times, however many times a day, like 5 times a day. Here, I feel that neutrality of whatever people may be worshipping, practicing or doing in their, like, spirituality. It's not, like, they are not trying to impose on you.
On the others, yeah.
This is very, very universal in that sense. And I guess the French population here is enormous, so you hear a lot of French around. And so if you don't speak French, you kind of feel a little like, okay, I suppose this is India, but not.
This is India, but not?
Yeah. I guess like if I was to describe it to someone, I would say, just like I read in an article, is a universal town. A place where people were here to develop themselves in their own way, at their own pace, giving the best that they have in their talents, in their gifts, like yourself working in the radio, doing what you love. Sam, you know, using his computer skills as well as his capoeira and his teaching with something that he's passionate about. Prema, this lovely lady who's receiving me at her place, she's got this love and talents for fashion and colors, so she's doing that with Rangoli. Like I can feel and see that people are just doing what they love the most, and I guess that's how the world should be all about. But we are so brainwashed by media and by, you know, this idea that money is the focus of our lives and we should all work for corporations and make as much money as we can and buy the coolest flat screen.
I think you should come here.
So, yeah.
No, it's tempting, I know, because even if you are awake and so to speak, but you go out and start watching the news a little bit, or I mean TV a little bit, it does drag you in. Oh, that's a need, but do you really need at the end?
I don't feel so, no. I don't even turn on the TV.
Oh, okay. Then you are awakened somehow.
Yeah. I've never had a TV. Like, besides when I lived with my mom. Mm. Since I moved out when I was 18, I never had a TV at my house.
So your life is also really particular in certain things, but dedicated to some other stuff. Did you manage to interact with any of those our yoga instructors or teachers?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No. I did see that there were a few classes happening in different styles and modalities at Quiet and Pitanga, and I can't remember the other name, is Verit Guest Verite. House. Verite.
Which yoga do you practice?
I studied under the lineage of Swami Satyananda Saraswati, and it's Bihar, the school of yoga. I guess Bihar is in the northeast of India. It means to be like one of the poorest states. And Swami Satyananda is a student of Swami Sivananda. And so I studied that in New Zealand when I lived there.
You studied there, not in India?
Not in India, no.
So that was your main reason to go to India in the first place?
I always felt very drawn to coming here, even before yoga. So because of living in New Zealand and practicing, like, it made more sense. But I didn't come with like a course booked or any or a retreat or anything. I came open to whatever India could bring and make me discover. So I came with no major plan. All I wanted was to travel and be receptive and go wherever I was taken. And that's actually what happened. There were like two or three places that I knew I was going to because of friends, like local friends, as well as friends that were also travelers like me, were going to be in places. And so I did that. I went to Hampi to meet a group of Indian friends. And from Hampi, we went to Gokarna, Gokarna to Pune, Pune to Delhi, Delhi to Rishikesh, and it just went on.
We're happy.
Na praia da Maralina tem dois camarão sentado falando da vida alheia. Ei, camarão malvado. Na praia da Maralina tem dois camarão.
What about capoeira?
Capoeira came into my life when my mom decided to leave Brazil. And at the time I was 15, and she said, oh, you know, I'm not really happy with what I'm doing here, and I don't see opportunity, and I've kind of had enough. So just for now, you're going to live with your grandmother, and I'm leaving overseas.
Where
to Australia.
To Australia.
Yeah. And it was at the time of the Olympic Games in Sydney. And it was 1999. So I didn't really like the idea, but I had no option. So I went to live with my grandmother in the countryside. And it was a very, very small town. And I come from a massive city of 20 million people. And we moved to this 10,000 people town. So to begin with, I felt a bit like...
boring?
You know, like lost and lonely and like abandoned, and there were all these mixed feelings. And I got to know a few people soon enough, and I used to go to computing classes. It was just as internet was starting. And so I was sitting at the computer one day, and I heard the sound of the birimbau from afar. And I knew what a birimbau sounded like, but I had never seen it like a class or somebody playing it. It was like a TV thing, because like I told you, I'm from like middle class family and so hangout, so it's not part of our everyday life. And I had been to Bahia once as a kid with my mom, so I think I had memories of seeing that on the street. It was something I knew it existed, but it wasn't close to me. So I heard the sound of birimbau, and I was like, wow, that it sounds really close. I'm going to like search and figure where this is coming from. So I did. I left this computing school. Then it was just across the road. There was like a club, a sports club. And there was a class going on. And so the teacher was playing the birimbau and teaching the students. And they were only boys. And so I you know, stick my head on the front door, and I was like kind of a little bit shy, like having a look from afar. And he was like, come in, you're welcome to sit down and watch for a while if you want. And I really liked it. As soon as I was in that environment, I felt like, yeah, this is my kind of thing. I'm totally into it. I've never really been into gyms or like boring mechanical exercise. And because of this moving to the countryside and being a little bit sad, I was eating a lot and putting on weight. I was using food as my, you know,
to comfort you?
Yeah, as my comforts. Food was my comforts, and ice cream was the main comforts for me. It was like becoming an ice cream monster. So I remember that the next day he said to me, oh, you know, you're most welcome to come and train if you want. Classes are at whatever time it was, like 6 p.m. If you have a pair of white pants, wear it, please. Come in a t-shirt, and later on we sort you out a uniform. So the next day I went to train. And I guess from there on I never stopped. So many things have happened in my capoeira life and discovery and path. And I've trained with a few different masters and teachers and people that have helped me to find where I am now. I spent a little bit of in New York with this incredible master who is like the legend of capoeira Angola. He's a live legend because there's other legends, but they've already gone. Mestre João Grande is his name. He's now 83, I think. It was recently his birthday. And when in New Zealand, I also trained with the group there. I traveled back to Brazil many times to, you know, absorb and be in events and festivals and all sorts. But it started in the countryside with this teacher called Serginho. I trained with Serginho the whole time I was in this place for this little city called Palmares Paulista. I was in Palmares until early 2001, and then August 2001, I left to New Zealand. By then, my mom had already spent some time in Australia, and things didn't really go the way that she wanted because Australia is a little bit difficult with immigrants. And so she left to New Zealand in order to do her papers and visas and all of that. And things happened for her, and she met my stepdad and they got married and she stayed there and I joined her. So yeah, I guess that's a little bit of how the story goes. So capoeira has always been part of all the things that I've done, whether it was like very disciplined and I was training 3-4 times a week, or whether like I took a little bit of time off for studies or for work or for traveling. But I don't think, like, since beginning back when I was 15 to 16 until now, I'm about to turn 32, it's always been part of my life somehow.
But also between connection between samba and capoeira, there is a connection there, right?
Yes.
Because as capoeirista, we're supposed to know how to do samba.
Yeah, there's a song in capoeira that says, the capoeirista is somebody who brings a smile on his face, the ginga in his body, or the swing in his body, and the samba on his feet or her feet. So, like, in order to really be part of this movement and this art form, this lifestyle, they say that these are like three requirements that hopefully you will at some point either acquire or already have. So they are closely linked. I guess it's just like yoga and meditation is the same thing. When people ask you, what style of yoga do you practice, or what, you know, what kind of meditation technique do you use, it's irrelevant.
Because at the end is relevant because it's just a path.
Yeah.
The goal is the same.
It's all the same thing. Like there's no separation, there's no difference. You may do like the shapes with your body, this asana, this postures, but what is the posture aiming for? And you may do capoeira and play the music and be doing all the jinga and na-na-na, but what is this leading you to? And the same with the dance, like what is this for? It's like, it's just so you are there, you are whole, you are present, you are interacting with the music and being like
with the rest of the people on the beat and the moment itself.
Yeah, like I guess the roda, we say that the roda or the circle is the whole world, because the world is also round, huh?
Yeah.
And within that interaction and that moment, anything can happen. And anybody can be there.
True. It's so true.
There's no difference to that in life. Like, you may interact with people that you really like and that you get along with, and you may interact with people that you really don't get along with, but you still have to work together. Because you were put in that situation. And the same in capoeira or the samba even. Like, sometimes in the capoeira game, you know, you're about to start a game, or like what we call like one-on-one. We don't call it a fight, we play. So it's a game. And that person you've never seen in your life, and you may feel afraid, they may look much stronger than you are, and you like don't know how you're gonna do it all. And they may be the most lovely person on earth and guide you through the game and be really gentle. And maybe you knew to go and play with somebody and they look very fragile and like they're going to be very gentle and they are the most violent person.
It's true that things come out even if you... The things even you're not aware of, eh?
Yeah. And with the samba is similar, because sometimes you're like there, you know, participating in the clapping and the music and the dance, and you may be on the street, and so like a drunk person comes by and also wants to take part in the roda. You can't say no. The street is a public place.
True.
They can also join in, and you have to just deal with that and accommodate them. And I think that's really beautiful, because it also makes people feel like it's
welcome.
Inclusive. Mm. It's not exclusive. Just like life. There's no difference.
You were playing capoeira here?
A little bit. Yeah. I went to Sam's class and hung out with his students a little. I didn't go to his class last night because I had a few other things to do. And we have a class today with the kids at Dipanan School, which I will stay for, and this Pondicherry as well.
Yeah. But I think capoeira in favelas, at least I remember one of the masters said so, that, and I think also samba or those kind of activities, so yoga, they do make a difference to the kids, the street kids, especially those who are living in a really harsh environment, no?
For sure.
It can give you a meaning.
Yeah.
It can give you... Oh, I remember one of the jazz players also is doing that with the drumming. I said, what a difference you can see with the kids who might be lost, and you give them something, and that becomes the life itself.
I think with anything that gives you control and ownership of your body, you know that like the physical aspect of your being is just a layer. And recognizing, whether you recognize this consciously or whether it's an unconscious step to begin with, at least, because soon I think everybody figures it for themselves. But you understand that if that physicality and that layer of your being, which is the most gross or the most apparent layer, is under your control, then the other things can also be controlled. So say that you come from a household where, you know, you're being beaten up, or that you don't really have a lot of love, support and care, you know that this is temporary. And although it may be really difficult, if you get yourself strong and you know how to deal with that situation for that time being, soon you can get out of that.
You transplant it into other things, yeah.
Yeah, and
that's true.
I don't know, it also gives you a sense of like identity and like relationship to like your ancestries or your ancestors, like music and the beat of the instruments brings your energy up and makes you more happy if you can. Even if it's not like a style of music that you really relate to, I feel that the beat of the drumming has something to do with like the base energy and chakra, and so it like
the heartbeat,
it helps to rise that energy. I'm really happy that I've come this way, and I actually postponed my ticket. By now, I was meant to already be back home. I had a flight on the 17th of this of January, and when I received Sam's first email, I was in Rishikesh making my plans to go back down to Mumbai, where I was meant to fly off from. And I thought, I think I want to stay a little more and go and see this place and spend time there. And I was meant to leave after my last workshop, which is tomorrow night, and I'm not going. I'm staying for a little bit longer, probably until like 2 or 3 days before my flight. Yeah, I almost feel a little bit afraid to say, because I know that words have got a lot of power, and I'm really magic at like manifesting things in my life as soon as I say it or as I imagine. So I could happily live here.
Literally, those things when you go on the path do manifest. It's true. You know, I would be happy to have you.
Thank
around,
you.
And I'm sure that you got lots to do. Even in the other work you're doing, there's enough children around, and also our children, some of them are kind of lost or bored, or how to say, like, give really something.
And I guess that the amount of money that you have in your bank account, or the setup that you may find yourself living in, whether it's like a really privileged background or not, that doesn't necessarily mean that you understand your place in the world. Some people, they are really well off and they are lost.
No,
some
money,
people,
money
they don't have much.
That is not conditioned.
Yeah, and for other people, they are like, you know, really simple and having like just the basics, and they are really strong in their direction, in their mission, in their heart. So whether dance, yoga, capoeira, or whatever I or you or anybody can contribute to these people, then it's regardless of what walk of life they come from.
Yeah, that is important. I think each part is important. Luciana, thank you a lot.
You're welcome.
And see you next time.
Great. Thank you.